Hey guys, welcome back to No Snooze News Podcast. This is one of your hosts, Jacob Dostal, and I'm here with Adam Regeer. Today we wanted to share with you guys a couple cool stories going on in the business world revolving around Hershey's, Toyota. We've got an interesting one in a new bar slash restaurant kind of doing a stock market type of deal with pricing of drinks. And I think, Adam, what's your last one you're covering?
Mine is on Uber and how they're in a little bit of trouble with the government in San Francisco.
Oh boy. All right, cool.
Yeah.
So we've got those four. You know, I think to start off with a fan favorite of Hershey's. So I found this one on CNN Business. It was trending a little bit in the later half of last week. And Hershey's is deciding to change the look of their candy bar for what they consider the first time in history. So for people who haven't, you know, heard about what's going on with Hershey's in this, they're trying some new marketing techniques and stuff like that to try to boost their sales. So what they decided to do was etching in, instead of the Hershey's name on those chocolate bars, they're going to have 25 different types of emojis, which is kind of interesting,
oh, wow.
I guess. And they said this is the first time that they're changing the original Hershey's bar. So since like 1900. So, I mean, they are making about 50 million of these. They're going to take off the Hershey's name and they're going to have like the thumbs up emoji, the hard eye emojis, the fist bump, all that jazz. So, one of the spokespeople for them said that they want to feature meanings that would help spark a conversation. And when I was reading that, you know, I could only think back to, okay, what does this remind me of in terms of consumer products? And I thought back to Coke. You know how they had that whole Share a Coke ad stuff going on
where they had the last four years? The cans with different names of people.
Different names, or, you know, if you have a wacky name or one of the ones that doesn't fall on the top 200 list of names or whatever, it's like BFF or mom, dad, you know, that kind of stuff. And this kind of reminds me of that same scenario where it seems like they're kind of copying Coke. And I know Coke had a ton of success with this. I think one of the reports said that Coke increased their overall sales by 2% after running the campaign and during the campaign. And that 2% growth in sales came after decades of declining revenues for Coke. They had to do something quick. And I think Hershey's is kind of going through along those same circumstances. So it's funny that, you know, they're both of these businesses have chosen this route with personalizing their products to, it seems like millennials, but they're going maybe with some other generations as well. But I know for millennials, at least, it's mostly about, you know, we love personalization. We love connecting with each other and making it our own. And I think both of these companies are going to try to do this, at least what from that comment from the spokesperson from Hershey's, it sounds like they're going to try to influence this with social media and have it sharing with sparking conversation of like hard eyes from someone. Mm. I can see someone asking someone out with this, you know, that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully no proposals with it, but we'll see.
Yeah. I wonder how long it's going to go for.
If it's going to be
like a temporary thing, or they're going to be doing this for many months.
Well, they said they're only making like 50 million. So,
oh, okay.
Probably not too long. And I know that's split between their regular size and I think they have those snack sizes. So 50 million, who knows how long that goes. I mean, if you usually buy Hershey's, you're putting them on your s'mores for the summertime. Now you're putting them, you can share them and, you know, crack each one, because each one of those little bars on the whole bar is going to have a different emoji. So I could see that being like a thing at campfires, like cracking off one. You see the girl you like on the other side of the bonfire, I'll hand her this one. It's got the hard eyes kind of thing. So who knows? But yeah, that was my story from Hershey's.
All right. Well, that's a good one to start out with. Mine is a little bit more depressing, I guess. And it kind of hits close to home. So I work for Toyota in the U.S., and President Trump this past Friday issued a proclamation stating that allies like the European Union and Japan have created unfair trade barriers. And specifically, he said that in the automotive sector, that imported vehicles are a threat to U.S. national security. So this caused a little bit of drama between the Trump administration and big companies such as Toyota. And Toyota had comments saying that they feel unwelcome in the U.S. and that their contributions to employees across America are not valued. So, and to give some context to this, to these comments and to this sharp rebuke, Toyota has 10 manufacturing plants, 1,500 dealerships, and directly and indirectly employs 475,000 U.S. workers.
Wow.
So, to this kind of comment would really cause a lot of drama because Toyota doesn't see us as a national security threat at all. In fact, we see our company as one that benefits the U.S. economy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit interesting how both Toyota and the Trump administration are butting heads on this.
And so you said is there some other companies as well? You mentioned the European Union. Are there other, like the European car manufacturers, are they involved in this too?
This affects most companies, well, all companies that aren't American, aren't headquartered in America. So European Union companies such as, you know, Mercedes-Benz, BMW, they're going to be impacted by this. And then other Japanese companies such as Honda, Nissan, not just the OEMs, but also all the suppliers who import different parts. It's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, that's interesting. Especially, I think it's funny that it's said about that. And I think it kind of reminds me of when he was running for president. And I think when he was just elected, I remember him talking about how all of these companies need to start bringing more manufacturing back to America. And I think one of the big headlines was when Toyota and Mazda planned like that $10 billion in 5 years and to build different manufacturing spots. I know one is like a $2 billion factory in Alabama and just stuff like that. It seems like in the past he said this and it's really forced some of these companies to do so. I know now you're the expert here. Do you guys build the Corollas in Mexico, or is that not a thing anymore? Because I remember back in like 2017, that was like they were going to move the Corollas over to Mexico.
Yeah, so I like how you mentioned about the plant in Alabama. So in part of some of Trump's comments about bringing manufacturing back to the U.S., Toyota decided to not produce the Corolla in its intended Mexico plant, but had moved it to a factory in Alabama that we're currently building. And that factory is going to be a joint venture between Mazda and Toyota.
Okay, so that's what that $2 billion.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So part of the capacity is going to create Mazdas, and then another part of the plant capacity is going to produce Toyotas. So it's a 50-50 split on the investment in that plant.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think, too, it's funny that, you know, Trump's big on manufacture in America, hire in America, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Yet now it seems like Toyota is almost as American made as Ford is. I mean, I was looking at a graph from 2016. I think last week I was looking at this. And Toyota has 61% of their cars are made in America, and Ford is only at 64%. Yet everyone's going to think that Ford is more American than Toyota, but they're almost manufacturing the same percentage of cars in the U.S. as each other.
Yeah.
The only company that is manufacturing 100% of their cars in the U.S. is Tesla. And I know Trump, when he was running for office, it was a big deal that he had like two American-made cars in his lot, and one of them happened to be a Tesla. But I just thought that was interesting, too. I never would have thought Tesla would have been 100% made in domestically, but...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it seems like the trend in the auto industry is to produce more vehicles in Mexico. So I think that's mostly what Trump's intentions are, is to stop that trend of manufacturing being moved from the U.S. to Mexico. So part of it, I feel there is some benefit to the U.S. economy, but then also maybe the message was delivered a little harshly.
Yeah.
But
interesting.
That's his style sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like it has been the trend there. Yeah. Well, cool. All right. Well, I guess a non-depressing news here, and it's a little different from what we usually cover. I came across hearing about this, I think, from one of my buddies, but it seems to become maybe more of a national trend as it goes forward. But there's these bars and restaurants in the Midwest who are pricing their beers like in the stock market. So it's basically based on demand. And for like their specials, instead of happy hour and stuff, they'll have an occasional crash each day, to where at some point in a day, multiple times, each one of their beers will crash to its lowest price. So like, as an example, $2.50 for an Oberon, or like $1.50 for Miller High Life. And then people just start whamming away, buying those, chugging whatever beer they got in their hand right now.
Yeah.
To get one of these other ones at a low price. But I thought that was really cool. I mean, this would be something I would definitely go to one of these bars and just try to. But me, I'm made a little different from other people because I like all different kinds of beers. I don't know about you, Adam, if you're like a light beer guy or.
Yeah. Yeah, but I usually just drink like Miller Lite or Corona. So
there you go.
So all these different craft beers, not really my thing, but I can definitely see where this would be enticing to a consumer. And I think it's also, it really benefits the restaurant and the bar itself, because when it comes to inventory turns, you're turning over your beer inventory a lot quicker, because you're basing it off of supply and demand, and you can switch prices to get your older stock out of the cellar, I guess.
Yeah, and I think too, I mean, it's one of those things where all of these restaurants and bars now are looking to differentiate themselves from each other. And if you get a big stock board up there and everyone's seeing the different prices, like it's showing the green arrow up, red arrow down, people are trying to play the system. Maybe they're shorting some of them. Who knows what the hell they're doing? Maybe they're stockpiling like three beers to the side and wait.
Yeah.
They're going to go trade it with someone else. Who knows? But I mean, that's really cool. It's a way to, if they have, as you said, the inventory on hand, a way to get rid of it, just drop the price, make it crash, and just start guzzling it out to everyone. That's how you move through some of your inventory. Yeah, that is, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. I want to. Is there one in Chicago?
I don't know if there's one in Chicago. The one I was reading about was trying to, they were trying to start business in Detroit, downtown Detroit, which is cool. So
yeah,
there was one in Lansing as well. So it's pretty cool.
All right, we'll have to check it out when you're in Michigan next time.
Definitely.
All right. So, my last article. I guess this episode I was going with the trend between government interacting with businesses. So that's kind of a pattern. So mine is about Uber, and they recently got into a little feud with the San Francisco local government. And Uber was ordered by the California Appeals Court to turn over data to the city of San Francisco about how many of their drivers are responsible for illegal parking, traffic congestion, and safety hazards. And then the probe, there's also another underlying cause for this probe is, the San Francisco wants to see if Uber is underpaying its drivers based on the city's minimum wage laws. So right now, Uber treats its drivers as independent contractors, whereas for them to apply to the minimum wage laws, they would have to be considered employees of Uber. So it's pretty interesting how, I just thought the article was pretty interesting how a local government can spur a large organization to turn over massive amounts of data to see if they're causing traffic violations, and also if their employees aren't getting paid what the city thinks is the correct amount.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially because, as you said, I mean, they're not necessarily employees of Uber. I mean, Uber is one of those systems to where they're playing both sides of the market, where they're driving supply, but they also are driving demand of these transportation between, you know, citizens, regular people. And as you said, the independent contractors or workers, whoever these drivers are, driving just regular people to and from different places. And it just is a very interesting business model altogether. And especially Uber's been in the news a lot lately these last couple of weeks because they've gone public. And it's been interesting to see the type of profitability they're projecting for them. And, you know, I think it's almost impossible for them to stay profitable, at least sustain this profitability at all, because their core business is, I mean, right now I feel like that ride sharing market is saturated as all get out. And
yeah,
it seems like even when they were, before they were going public, they were basically just giving away free money to people to get rides so that they could try to fluctuate the growth of their business. Yet it was still flat or negative during their when they launched and went public. And they've just been spending so much money, and they're especially with Uber Eats, I mean, those, it's just driving costs through the roof. And now you got this government on your back, and it's just, I don't know, it's just a very interesting week, month for Uber, where they're going through like $3 billion of costs, and they have no infrastructure to show for it. As I mean, Amazon, a couple years ago, they went through this kind of same thing, $3 to $4 billion worth of costs, and they were losing that year on year, but at least they were building infrastructure. Now you see where that's coming into play, just driving the growth of their business now. Whereas Uber is on the other side, where they don't have anything to show for it. It's just, I don't know. It's a very interesting business. It'll be interesting to see where the San Francisco thing plays out, and if other cities kind of hop on this, like New York, where they already don't really have good relationships with, and see how they piggyback on each other.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, I don't know what I was going to say there.
You're going to say you're going to say how you're a Lyft guy, aren't you?
No, I only have Uber on my phone.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, no, I don't have Lyft.
Well, you're not really in like you're in Ann Arbor, so I mean, you just drive, right?
Yeah, most of the time I just drive, but it'll be interesting. These ride-sharing companies are really going to impact the auto industry as a whole, and I don't know, especially when self-driving technology comes into play, I think it's going to cut down on a lot of vehicle sales, and more people are just going to go into these ride-sharing apps. So maybe right now, I don't think Uber might not be the most sustainable company, but I do think if you give them time, I think they will be a big threat to the industry as a whole.
If they can survive it.
Yeah, if they can survive, but if they're not turning a profit, it's hard to keep going.
Yeah, you wonder if some of these companies like Tesla or any of them are, you know, there's some investment going on behind the scenes in some of these driverless or cars with ride sharing. And you know, we always talk about millennials being the cable cutters of the world, and some of them, in a lot of instances in big cities, they're the car cutters of the world, where I know tons of people who just Uber or ride share anywhere they go, and they don't use a car, and they save money by doing so. So it'll be interesting to see, and hopefully maybe one of these companies will come up on top and maybe not focus on other silos of their business like Uber Eats and food delivery. You know, there's a ton of those companies, which I don't see those profitable at all either. But very interesting stuff.
Exactly.
Well, good. Well, just wanted to share all these stories to you guys. You know, this was to end the week last week, start off your guys' week this week. Just give you some talking points. You know, this is what the point of the podcast is, going to work or just talking to people. You know, you overcome into those conversations where you're kind of stuck on what to talk about. So just kind of sharing some stuff, make you sound knowledgeable. Maybe go research some of this stuff as well. If you want to go to our website, nosnoosnewspodcast.com. We're going to have a Facebook group as well if you guys want to join that. We're going to have links to these articles that we cover. You guys can go read them yourselves, comment on some of the thoughts you think, comment on some of the stuff that we've been talking about on this podcast today. And, you know, like and subscribe. And you can find this, I know, on Spotify. We're working on Apple Podcasts right now. And you know, me and Adam will be sharing this. But yeah, share it with your friends if you like it. Hit us up if you like it as well. You know, we're always welcome to feedback and all that. And, you know, this is for you guys to be able to have conversations with people you come across and sound knowledgeable, at least in the business world.